Contribution by John Gilpin in honor of his wife, Mary Ellen, on her birthday. It took 65 years to get this good. Programs on WILL are made possible in part by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone round tables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they're here to talk with us about dogs, dog care, behavior, and training. They join us once a month on the first Friday of the month, although in September we were preempted by a nasty hurricane.
Yeah, Katrina bumped us off the air.
Katrina. So if you'd like to talk with Jim and or Carol, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Jim has Malamutes, and Carol has a Golden.
Has a Robbie.
Robbie.
Oh, I have good news.
Yes.
Jim already knows this, but was it Labor Day weekend? Yeah, Labor Day weekend. We were at dog shows, and my Robbie took Best of Breed back-to-back both days.
That's so wonderful.
I was very thrilled with that.
Very good.
Very thrilled. It's been a long time coming. So.
Yeah, a couple of months ago, you were not happy with your progress, right?
Yes, yeah. But yes, he looked very good. Looked much better than me, as a matter of fact. So he looked very nice.
I'm
we had
sure
a good weekend.
The two of you looked grand.
Yeah, he's fun.
Yeah, have you brought some news
to
share
yes,
with
I need,
us?
I need to do this now. Our audience is still out there raptly listening to us. Tomorrow.
But before I start talking.
And before Jim starts talking for 50 minutes. Tomorrow, the Humane Society is having an event at Crystal Lake Park in Urbana, and it's called Mutt Strut. This is a new event. Mutt Strut and Blessing of the Animals. It's $20, and registration at the event is $25. So you get to walk your dog around the perimeter of Crystal Lake. Mm-hmm. The blessing will take place at 9 a.m., and we did this at Bark in the Park, and it was a phenomenal success to have the animals blessed. And then we have contests, and these are the contests. I'll let you guess which one I'm going to judge. We have the best dog trick. We have the waggiest tail. We have the best dog costume. The biggest dog, the smallest dog, and the best dog kisses.
So those waggiest dog.
No, I volunteered to do best dog kisses.
Oh, okay.
But I think we're going to have the dog.
That means you're going to get a lot of dog spit all over
you. I think we'll
you.
Have the dogs kiss their owner. And what people are doing, too, if
well,
you'd like
you
to.
How can you judge it if they kiss
well,
the owner?
Well, I'm a judge. I can do it any way I want.
Okay.
If you'd like to sponsor one of our shelter dogs to be walked by one of our dog walking volunteers, it's $10, and you can call the shelter and arrange for that, and that gets all our shelter dogs out and walking tomorrow too.
Oh, that's great.
Uh-huh.
Now, what do the proceeds cover in terms of the registration fee?
All goes to the Humane Society.
Humane Society.
Mm-hmm. All those funds. We were very successful. Speaking of Katrina, we had a relief fund. We purchased supplies and sent them to the Humane Society in Southern Mississippi. That was just devastated by the storm, and I believe at last count it was well over $11,000 that we were able to collect and purchase the supplies and just ship the supplies right to these organizations that needed them. So it always amazes me how generous this community can be.
Yeah. Now, a number of animal welfare organizations have been lending help to animals evacuated from the Gulf Coast because of the hurricane. Have people from the Champaign-Urbana area been involved other than donating funds?
You just read my mind. I was thinking about a meeting we had Monday night with a friend and supporter who had just returned from Gonzales, Louisiana. She had driven down there to help. They needed a volunteer coordinator, and that's what she's good at. And she'd driven, got in the car, drove down to Gonzales, slept in a tent in a gravel parking lot. They had hundreds of dogs, just hundreds of dogs. And she found herself getting into the office, FEMA was there, and HSUS was there, and helping the people coordinate their activities, so you didn't have so much duplication of effort, and the dogs needed to be walked and bathed and vetted and watered, and you're talking 300 to 400 or 500 dogs. Is a huge mammoth task, but she was. She, I think she was there for over a week.
And how are the efforts at reuniting people with their animals going?
They're reuniting people and their animals every day. But I'm so glad in a way that an event like this occurred, such a catastrophic event, to make people realize that others are not going to leave their animals in a disaster. They refuse to. So when Rita came along, then they let them take their animals with. And I think that more than anything else, we all know what the bond is like with our animals. But for those that don't, I think they have a new appreciation that this is a very strong emotional attachment that people risk their lives rather than leave their animals behind.
Yeah. You know, now whether it's a weather emergency or a medical emergency for an owner or some other type of emergency, what kinds of things might we think about? What might we do so that we're prepared in case we need to go with an animal or we need to turn over an animal to a friend or a family member?
It's a good question. I know that we talked about this a couple years ago, I think, Jim, in a meeting. I'm almost convinced we did. But to have leash and collar and food and water and a crate and all the essentials that you'd need in a designated spot, just as you know to go to the basement in case of a tornado, have all those items there and accessible at a moment's notice. And as a matter of fact, with this has forced us to do as a humane society is to put together a disaster plan, because
shelters have had to be evacuated.
Sure they did. The one that we worked with in Mississippi, the roof was blown off, and they were filled with animals, more coming in, and I think if I remember correctly, their executive director resigned, and the board president had to come in and take over the operation of the shelter in the aftermath of the storm. So having a disaster plan in effect and hopefully never having to use it, but having an effect and having people familiar with it is critical. And we live in Tornado Alley, so the odds of that occurring aren't that, you know, it could happen to us. So
I think in terms of training, what people can do right now is get a crate. People call them cages. We hip dog people call them crates. And there are all kinds of crates. There are metal crates, they're soft crates that probably wouldn't work for this too well, airline crates that are made of plastic, and train your dog, and it's best to train your puppy, to stay in the crate. In a time of a disaster, the dogs are going to have to be housed in a strange place, usually, and if they're crate trained, they can go into a crate and feel safe and secure, even when they're not at home or you're not around or something like that, instead of fighting the crate, trying to get out, hurting themselves, and becoming a management problem for whoever is trying to take care of them. And it's not that hard to crate train a dog, because dogs like small confined areas. When they're a little nervous, they would want to go in a thing like a crate, but if they're not used to it, especially if strangers are dealing with them. We've had the problem trying to get a dog in a crate, and they can be extremely frightened. And once they're in, they just, you know, they'll pull their nails out trying to dig their way out. So to avoid that, just start crate training them fairly easy. Feed them in the crate occasionally. Close the door and stay with them. Close the door and leave the room. Close the door and leave the house and come back right away. Just so they get the idea that the crate is a safe place to be. It's a good place to be. You get fed there. Mom and dad aren't going to leave forever. They'll be right back. And that's what you can do, not only to have the equipment, but to have the dog used to the equipment.
Yeah, and it's never to be punishment.
Oh, no, never. Mm-mm. No. No,
we could.
You'll have disastrous results if you punish a puppy by putting it in a crate.
Yeah, I don't know. You can use it for timeouts, but not, you know, if the dog is acting up. You put it in there with a toy, with some food.
The timeout's really for the person.
Yeah, right.
Because I remember those days. It's like, oh, my God, I can't take this one more second. And
no,
the
dogs are always
and
good.
Up
and
to
they're
the
never
crate.
Bad.
And then you get to sit now, back and take a deep breath.
Do you have a command for crate?
Kennel up.
Kennel up.
Mm-hmm.
Once a dog is crate trained, you it's surprising. Mm. It's hard to keep them out of it,
mm-hmm.
Especially if they get fed in it. Because they'll run in it, turn around and say, where's my food?
Mm-hmm.
We give always, I don't care how old the dog is, we have a cookie. When the dog goes in the crate, they get a cookie. And some dogs are smarter than us. They'll run in the crate, get their cookie, and then run right out again.
Mm-hmm.
So they can run back in and get another cookie. So it can be a problem. But always, always, always we give them a cookie when they go in the crate.
Yeah. Also for cats, if you can.
Cats, yeah. They're harder because they don't like crates.
They really don't.
But if I think, though, that if you started with a young animal or even an older one and made it a really good place,
mm-hmm.
you know, you had a catnip toy in there or you had treats in there
mm-hmm.
or you used the...
I had such problems with Shelley when I would have to put her in a crate to take her to the vet. And I'd have to sneak the crate in the house hours, if not the day before the appointment. And, oh, it was very problematic for me, but...
There are side benefits to crate training with cats or dogs, and that is you don't need a disaster to find a crate useful. Traveling,
mm-hmm.
If somebody's going to take care of the dog over the weekend, take their crate with, and it's not such a problem for the people dealing with them.
Dog shows, all the dogs are in crates
well,
at dog shows.
Yeah.
Always. Mm-hmm. So, and I have a crate that stays in the car, and he knows... that, you know, I open the door and open the crate and he's in there. He likes to go because we're going someplace fun. So, yeah, crate training is invaluable. And it doesn't matter if you have a 3-pound dog or a 150-pound dog. You'll need a crate at some point.
And they're safer in the car.
Oh, yeah.
So it's almost like a seatbelt for them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There are seatbelts for dogs, but
that's true.
Crates is better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listeners, if you'd like to talk with Jim and Carol, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. I have a 6-month-old rough collie, and she's a sweetie. She's really good about everything. She's developed this new... I'm starting to call it an eating disorder. It's not that she's not eating. It's that she's decided that she won't eat her breakfast or her dinner unless we're either one of us is standing right there, kind of watching her. And I think that started because originally, you know, we'd feed her and we'd be sitting at the table while she ate or whatever. But now she'll go and take a few bites, and then she comes over to see what we're doing or where we are. And then she'll even stop and just lay down and look at us and wait until we all go back to watch her eat. Yeah, and it's really pathetic. So I'm wondering, can you help me out here?
I'm going to throw something out here real quick, and Jim, I know you've got some ideas, but I'm wondering if she's not as hungry as she was when she was little. And feeding her 3 times a day at 6 months old, you might want to just cut back. How much are you feeding her?
Well, I'm only feeding her twice a day, morning and night.
Okay.
And, but we are feeding her about 4 cups.
Well, see, I think that might be a little too much food. When they don't want to, if they eat a few kibble and then go lie down, she's not hungry.
Okay. Well, I mean, this isn't even a breakfast, so she hasn't eaten all night or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do that. I mean, I can cut back a little bit and see if that makes a difference. Any other ideas?
Well, how big is she?
She's 6 months.
I think she's close to 40 pounds. She was 33 pounds when we last had her in the vet.
And
I think she's about 40 pounds.
What kind of food are you feeding her?
The IAMs
mm-hmm.
for puppies.
Carol makes a good point. Young puppies will, let's say maybe 2 months old, will eat almost as much as an adult because they're growing so quickly and they need a lot of nutrition. Once they hit 6 months, they're going to start slowing down their growth. They can't possibly keep up that growth that long. And right about that time, you do, especially a good quality food like you're feeding, very high in nutrition.
Uh-huh.
The dog doesn't really need that much. Now, So you can cut back, and that may inspire her. Now, you know, don't cut it in half or anything. Do it in slow stages.
Okay.
But the other thing is it may be, and, you know, your problem is a good problem to have. You know, there are other problems that you could have that would be much worse. If she wants to be social when you eat, if I have two attitudes. One, go watch her eat. It's quality time together, at least as far as the dog is concerned. But if it is an annoyance or you don't have the time, have her not eat. She's not dumb. You know, she's not going to starve to death. So if it just got to be a habit for her to eat while you're around, and now she won't eat until you're there, wait a few days. That it won't take that long.
Carol looked at me. I'm giving the rolled eyes.
What? You know, wait a while. She'll start to eat with you not there. She's not going to starve to death.
Well, one of my concerns, I mean, I thought about that. Just let her do whatever she wants. She doesn't necessarily have to eat it all at once or whatever. But I know that when she was real little, they, you know, all the books and the trainers said, you know, as soon as they finish eating, then they're going to have to poop and pee.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason why I wanted her to eat it all at once was so I could then let her out so she could go ahead and take care of that, because I didn't want her to have an accident in the house or anything.
Mm-hmm. Well,
at this age, is that less a concern?
Well, yeah, don't free. I take it you put the food down and you just leave it there till she finishes it.
Uh-huh.
What you should do is maybe put it down for 5 or 10 minutes and then pick it up and put it away and don't give it back unless, you know, she comes up and asks for it.
Okay.
Or just wait to the next scheduled feeding time.
And wait to the next scheduled feeding time. In other words, and dogs will fall into habits just like we do. Put it down in the morning, wait 10 minutes, put it up, don't give, and then put her out just as if she had eaten. So she gets into that routine.
Okay.
If she eats a little bit, that'll start the, you know, the process of her eliminating enough that you can put her out. But just as a habit, say, okay, here's your food, 10 minutes, out you go for your morning run, and just keep doing it as if she was eating. I think it won't take very long. She'll say, uh-oh, if I don't eat it now, I ain't going to get it later. It won't take her long to figure that out. Because even though she's not growing as fast as she was a few months ago, she's still growing and will continue to grow for another year anyway. But, you know, it'll slow down considerably as the time goes on.
Okay, and she's got the house training down real well. I mean, she's mm-hmm. absolutely great about it. So I don't have to worry about her having an accident or whatever.
If you put her out just as you were normally doing.
Okay.
You want to keep an eye on her the first time you do this, because it'll upset her a little probably, because she's used to having the food down or used to having you come in and saying, come on, eat. But
yeah, she is getting used to that.
Collies don't have as big a problem. Well, collie people, I suppose, could call in. But I know with the Malamutes, we don't want them to eat a lot and grow fast, because that kind of rapid development can cause problems with the hips.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So at 6 months, they're going to slow down their growth. You want that. You don't want them to, you know, become huge eaters and maybe develop hip problems or elbow problems or something like that because they grew too fast. And the food you're feeding is very high quality, good food. So it's, if you're for, you know, you're almost, I'm not saying you're forcing to, but you're almost forcing her to eat. You know, okay, eat, eat, eat. And so she does eat and she will grow. And she probably, you know, her body is telling her what she needs and you know, just let her do what is going to happen. And I sincerely doubt if she'll starve herself.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Next, we talk with a listener on line two, a listener on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Hey, Carol, Jim, great to hear from both of you today. I wanted to go back to the emergency preparedness topic.
Oh, and I know who this is, Tom.
Yes, it is.
Hi.
And I didn't hear the beginning, so I wasn't sure if you mentioned chipping your dog.
No, but, we didn't. You know, we didn't. That's a real good, good point, Tom.
And I think that's like one of the most important things. And it's cheap and it's easy and it doesn't hurt the dog at all. And it allows any humane society or veterinarian throughout the country to really confirm who owns the dog and where the dog belongs. Mm-hmm. And
as this is where you put your dog in a chipper, right? Grind him up.
Oh, God, he's just funny today.
Is that it?
As we've seen from the Katrina disaster.
Tom just goes right through.
There's a lot of dogs. There's a lot of dogs that people just don't know where they belong.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem. The other thing is, part of the normal family emergency preparedness plan should include telling your relatives, friends, and anybody else that you have a dog, not just kids and all that stuff.
Right.
So we should include the dog in that plan and letting the people who care about us know that the dogs are also part of the family and need to be taken care of, too.
That's a good point.
The Humane Society used to give out stickers that you put on your front door or front window to emergency people, like a fire department, saying there are five dogs in this house or there's one dog in this house.
And, which is a great start, but if your house gets washed away, that won't do any good.
This is for disasters other than hurricanes and things like that. But, yeah,
right.
if it's washed away.
It should still be part of the plan, I think, to let the people that you're telling, you know, here are the folks that we want to take care of, or here are the possessions we want to take care of. If you have a plan that includes, you know, somebody else watching out for your possessions and family, it should include the dogs too.
You're absolutely correct.
And other animals, I suppose. I suppose they're important.
I don't think so.
See, dog people are sick, aren't they?
Whoa.
All right. You're always wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah. I won't have Tom looking over my cat.
Oh, and Karen was telling us about Gonzales. They had iguanas and lizards, obviously. Iguana.
Birds,
reptiles, anything that people consider a pet.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line 3. Hi.
Hi, this is Tom, a different Tom. I have a grooming question. I have a 6-year-old Bouvier whose nails I've fallen way behind on trimming. It's been a few months, and they're very long, and I wanted to know, other than trimming them back till I start to see the quick, and I've also been advised to trim the sides to narrow them a bit to encourage the quick to recede quicker, am I actually going to be able to keep ahead of the nail growth and get them back to where they need to be?
Probably you can.
Okay.
Without getting to the quick.
Don't quick the dog.
Don't cut the quick. For one thing, they bleed all over the place.
And it hurts.
Right.
No, and it hurts the dog, too.
Oh, very much.
Yeah.
And then you have no luck the next time.
Yeah, and forget about trimming their nails after that. You should start just cutting off the tips as far from the quick as you can get. Have you trimmed the boobs the nails before?
Yes.
Okay. So was it a female?
Male.
Male. He's not struggling with you when you do this.
Oh, he pulls back a bit, but he's not fighting or anything.
Okay.
I don't think dogs like having their nails trimmed.
Well,
I've never seen one. They just don't like it because I think people aren't real comfortable doing it.
Yeah, and
I hate doing it.
You got to get in and do it real quick, as it were. The other thing you can do is try to encourage the dog to walk on concrete if you can, like walk on the sidewalk, take it for a walk, because that's going to wear down the nails. Maybe get a sandbox or something and have the dog dig in there.
A Dremel.
Well, I was going to get to the Dremel. Mm-hmm. But any sort of exercise where the dog is using its nails, that's, you know, wolves don't have people trimming their nails, but they stay trim because they're walking all the time on rocks and everything.
Okay.
She mentioned a Dremel, which is a kind of a little rotary tool. It looks like emery paper. It looks like a barber's hair cutter.
I have one.
Okay.
A Dremel?
Yes.
You have a Dremel? Okay.
Okay.
Those are pretty good for dogs that are reluctant. And the nice thing about those, but for people that don't have a Dremel, it looks like a barber's shear, but it has a little rotor on the end of it. You put emery paper on it, and it kind of grinds the nails down. And you can grind them down. It actually is a little less traumatic for the dog, I think, when we use it. And much less danger of cutting the quick when you use the Dremel.
I was afraid he might not like the sound, but I'll give that a shot.
To get him used to the sound, turn on the Dremel you know, a couple days in advance near mm-hmm. the dog, turn it on and off and on and off, so they just get used to the sound.
Okay.
But you have to be real careful with those shaggy feet that the Dremel doesn't get caught in the hair.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to, sometimes it's better to have two people, but somebody, look, I'm demonstrating with my own fingers.
See how Carol pulls the hair back.
Nicely manicured.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, keep the hair back so it doesn't tangle up, because that would not be a good thing to have
happen. Sure. I'd heard maybe poke a little hole in a sock and just... That's put the whole foot in there.
Very good idea.
Good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But if you have a Dremel, then the dog will tolerate it. And once again, this is for people with puppies. If you're going to use a Dremel, start early, because a Bouvier is a fairly big dog, and it's a lot easier if you have one to do it when they're a little puppy and you can hold on to them instead of when they get big and can knock you over.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks for the help.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Did you say line one?
That's you. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm Susan. And my question, it's a comment first. Earlier in the program, you were talking about crates and cages. And I just cannot imagine anything in a crate or a cage. I have a little dog. He's never even seen a crate or a cage. He comes to work with me every day, and he's a well-behaved, healthy animal. He's 18 years old. How did I do it without a crate or a cage?
Well, we were talking about crates and cages as it related to
training
disasters. Yeah. And how good it is. And you have to understand, too, that both Jim and I do a lot of things with our dog where they have to be transported. And dog doesn't weigh 18. He's not little. He's big. And I'm just more comfortable knowing that he's safely confined inside my vehicle.
But if there's a disaster, like if you're in a hurricane and your house gets wiped away and you get separated from your dog, and somebody rescues
him. Can you hear him?
Yes.
Sure.
He
has something to say, too. you get separated from your dog, and the people who rescue him, they've got 20 dogs, and they've got to confine him, if only for his own protection from the other dogs. Because if he's a small enough dog, the bigger dogs might pick on him. They want to put him in a place where he'll be safe. If they put him in a crate and he is afraid of the crate, he's going to be a problem. Say, and he's going to be terrified, and it's almost worse for him than being...
Or being caged at the vet's office after surgery.
Yeah, after surgery. Like they'll wake up. In fact, we had a friend with a Malamute woke up in a vet's crate and almost killed himself.
I've listened to your program for a long, long time. Well, I listened to WILL, and you're part of it. And every time you talk about this, I think these people say they're dog lovers. And yet they talk about doing cruel things to dogs. Because to me, that's the image I get.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll have to admit that I once was at the
Am
place
I
you're
getting
at.
The wrong message?
No. When I was had my very first dog, I had great difficulty house training this dog. And it was suggested to me to put him in a crate, and I was just appalled. I thought that I can't do that.
Yeah. That's me.
Yeah, and so I understand perfectly your position. However, I soon realized the benefits of it because I was able to house train the dog and have him for a good long life with me. Because the other person in my life didn't appreciate the fact that we came home every day to a mess. So I learned that way also.
My dog came with a perfect set of manners because I adopted him from the humane system.
There you go, Susan. Thank you.
Oops. Yeah.
Are you going to bring him out to Muttstrut tomorrow morning?
I don't think so. He can hardly walk anymore. Oh. He's got arthritis so bad.
Yeah.
And he's got, in spite of his good health, he does have some things, you know, that are consistent with old age.
Mm-hmm.
He's deaf. He lost his hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's almost blind. But his sniffer still works.
And he can bark.
Yeah,
we heard him back there. Yeah, you still love them just as much, though, don't you?
Oh, I know. and when I lose him, and I know I will, eventually, guess where I'm going? Right back to the Humane Society.
Good for you. Thank you. That's a good testimony.
Well, what I think I'll do is when I see his health failing is go get a new dog, introduce him into my into my household, so that even though I'll grieve for the one I've lost, I'll already have a new dog.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Is that a good idea?
It all depends on... I think, you know...
I don't like that gap thing, you know, where people say, oh, I'll never find another one like the one I lost.
I went through an episode where I lost both of mine 2 weeks apart.
Yeah.
And I often wondered, you know, I should have probably had a third that was younger, so the void wouldn't be so terrible. But when I lost them, they were both getting quite elderly and ill, and introducing a young dog at that point in their lives, I don't think. But you have to assess your own
play, and the old dog doesn't.
Correct, and it would have been a hardship on them to have to be an entertainment factor for a young dog. But everyone's situation is different, and I could only project how I thought they would feel. They may have truly welcomed an addition to the family. I was doing their thinking for them. So,
and that says to me, how do you know what to do? We have pedestrians walking down the street, and there goes Fritz barking. He's got to say hi to everybody.
I think that's great. He's a good companion for you.
Oh, I love him. Oh, well, you know I do. Now, there's Mike. They came in, the customers. Hi, sweetie. People love animals. We know that.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful thing.
Oh, yes. It makes your life whole.
And, you know, my dog is aging, but guess what? So am I.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to share all this.
Mm-hmm. It's very true. Well, good luck in whatever you decide to do, Susan.
Okay. But, you know, it upsets me when I listen to you talking about cages and crates. I don't know why. I don't want to ever see anything in a cage. I would never, you know, when I was a child, we used to go to the zoo. And I thought, what are these animals doing in a zoo? In a cage. Well, I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now.
No. Well, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Oh, I know, I know. And I know you folks are experts, and that's why I listen to your show.
Well, thank you.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guests this afternoon are Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about dogs. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455.
She had some good points, Amy. You know, it's you can never remove the emotional component when you're involved with animals. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's impossible. At least in my opinion, it's impossible. And I did truly feel that way. I thought crates were terrible, but that was just...
In terms of pet loss, I agree with her. I think getting another pet, and probably long before the first one gets too ill to deal with the youngster, is the best way to do it. But there are people, and there are people, mm-hmm. and some people will grieve a long time for the pet, and they don't want another one. And the other thing that's absolutely true is you'll never find a dog or a cat like the one that passed
right.
away.
They're very individual.
Don't try, you know.
Even if you're going with the same breed.
Yeah.
Even if you're going to the same breeder that you got your dog from or your cat from, they're going to be unique, just as the three of us are unique from our siblings.
Let's talk with another listener. Next, we're going to go to Savoy, a listener on line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a... 12-week-old German Shepherd and an 8-week-old Labrador Retriever. And the German Shepherd is about twice as heavy as the lab. And I'm looking for some advice on how to teach the German Shepherd not to jump all over and bite on the lab.
They're 12 weeks old and 8 weeks old?
Yeah.
I just let them enjoy themselves, if you want to know the truth.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, babies.
Puppies play pretty hard.
The
problem is, if we'd have to see it, because puppies play hard, but they can also play mean, too.
I think that these guys belong in puppy kindergarten, Jim.
Yeah. Come to our puppy kindergarten.
But that would reassure you.
But we, you know, at the end of the puppy kindergarten class, we'll have maybe 10 puppies in that age range that you're talking about. And we let them all run loose. And these guys just run into each other and bite each other.
Oh, it's fun to watch.
And we're there. If it gets too bad, you know, we'll separate them. But when puppies play, one of the things they're doing is learning not to bite. Okay, so one will bite the other one, and the one that's being bitten will just scream. And the first one will let go. And they kind of teach each other, you know, good touch and bad touch, sort of.
See, this is a good thing that they're learning.
So the kind of rough and tumble that you're going to see is actually fairly normal. Even when one starts to scream a little, as if it's in pain because it's being bit, it's teaching the other what it means, you know, and it's a bad thing. On the other hand, if you're upset by it, training a dog not to do that is kind of hard because it's just, this is how puppies play. It's the kind of problem, I think, by the time you train the dog not to do it, it's not going to be a problem because both these dogs are going to be about the same size.
And they're going to play all their lives.
And
too,
being only a month apart, the lab is going to catch up pretty quick.
Okay.
Because they, you know, they grow very rapidly the first few months, and then they start to slow down. So the lab's going to catch up. And even if the lab isn't as big as the Shepherd after a few months, it's still going to be of a size that it'll be able to defend itself a little better. What did you say, 12 weeks?
Mm-hmm. 12 weeks and 8 weeks.
I still think that she should probably think about puppy kindergarten. It would help her understand why this behavior occurs. Did you think about that, going to puppy kindergarten?
I would be interested in puppy kindergarten because I also I think it would be helpful for me to learn more about them.
Well, I guess you know what I want to ask her really quick?
No.
I want to know why you bought 2 puppies at the same time.
Are you crazy?
I didn't buy them at the same time, but okay. I did buy them 4 weeks apart. Mm-hmm. and I did that because we are out of the house a lot. And even though we completely devote ourselves to the puppies once we get home, I am a lover of both breeds.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted a companion.
And so I wanted them to have companionship
I like that. I tell people that a lot. Oh, my dog does this and this while I'm gone. Well, get another dog.
Mm-hmm.
and have somebody for him to play with instead of tearing
apart
the furniture.
They like to play. But what they're doing is playing, you see.
We're guessing because we haven't seen it, but unless these are vicious, mean, damaged dogs, they're really playing.
Okay.
And what you'll start to notice too is the Shepherd is a, as its name implies, is a shepherding and guarding dog, and it will tend to guard and shepherd the lab. The lab is a retriever, and it will tend to try to grab things away and run away with stuff and play chase more. So you'll start to see those individual things. I had a friend with a Doberman litter. And when they were about this age, they started guarding everything. They'd guard purses and they'd guard toys. it's just fun. It's fun to watch. But what you're describing is absolutely normal puppy behavior. And your question is, how do I stop it? And if it were me, I wouldn't try to stop it. I'd enjoy, as Carol said, I'd enjoy it.
And just enjoy it.
That's what's fun about dogs is watching this behavior.
These weeks go by so fast, and all of a sudden you have 2 adult dogs.
They grow so quickly. You'll
call the dog training club, and I think classes just started, didn't they, this week?
We had the orientation was this week. We haven't started class with puppies yet.
Yeah, and if it's not full, then, you know, obviously you can't yourself bring two puppies because then you'll really go nuts, but you might just want to enroll one and see how it goes.
Well, you can bring them both.
We bring them both.
Keep one outside the ring or have a family member bring
sure.
the other one, yeah.
Okay.
We need all the money we can get.
Okay. And really quickly, is it okay for them to share a crate, or should they have some?
Oh, no, don't. I wouldn't share. No,
well,
no.
Well, at this age, in an emergency, they're small enough, but they should learn to be alone in their own crate.
And I speak from not personal experience, but a friend that let her two beagles share a crate.
Uh-huh.
She wished she'd never done it because now they can't be separated. They can't put one in a crate and another in another crate.
Yeah, at this age, at this size, you can do it, and it kind of as an introduction. But as soon as they're kind of calm about being in the crate, very quickly you got to
put them side by side so they can see each other. But yeah, I would
usually with the pups, we'll keep them for transportation purposes. We'll put two or three in a crate if they're small enough. But we tend not to do that for feeding purposes or something like that.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Okay,
thank
let's
you.
See if we can get at least one more call in here this afternoon. Line 2, listener in Charleston. Hi. I think that caller's gone. Let's go to Normal, Illinois. Line 4. Hi.
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 We have an 11-year-old corgi who has started licking his forelegs to the point where the fur has started to get kind of a stained look, and sometimes he gets down to the flesh. How do I know if that's an allergy or something else, and what can I do for
him? I think the treatment is the same. You should take him to the vet and check it out. It could there's so many explanations. Could be boredom. Could be a bug bite. Could be a seed or something got in.
Could be pain.
Could be arthritis.
We wondered if it was joint pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it very well could be.
Is he licking near the joint?
Kind of what I'd call the knee area.
Yeah.
It could be grass allergies, bug allergies.
But she would have noticed all this in the previous 11 years of, unless he truly developed an allergy.
Allergies is funny things.
They are funny
things. It might not have flared up until he was, you might have changed your laundry soap or something. And
I'm going to guess that he's got pain in that.
I think that's the best explanation. But the number one thing is to go to the vet and show it, because dogs' tongues can take flesh off of dead animals. I mean, they're fairly powerful. And you'll get what's called a lick granuloma, where they literally take the hair off, and then they take the layers of skin off, and it can be pretty bad.
Okay.
But there's something irritating the dog there. Best guess is maybe an arthritic. Yeah. You mentioned.
And they can do so much now for pain relief.
Yes, so many things.
If that's what it is. Or if it's an allergy, they can prescribe medicine.
Okay.
You can try giving him a small aspirin. He's so small.
I wouldn't. Go to the vet.
Go to the vet.
Okay. He's about 25 pounds.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know the dose. We have 100-pound dogs, so we give them children's dosages.
Oh, okay.
But you got to give them.
It's got to be therapeutic dose, so.
Yeah, you got to give them.
Well, now they've got etigizumab
or
rimadyl.
Yeah,
enteric-coated aspirin.
Right, so that it doesn't hurt their stomach lining. But going to the vet is the best idea.
Okay.
It can be treated.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Well, we've taken care of all the listeners, and
we still have somebody there.
I know, but they just came in.
Well,
we're not going to be able to get to them, I'm afraid. But we're out of time. But one more time, we want to mention
the Mutt Strut tomorrow morning.
Mutt
Strut tomorrow morning, Crystal Lake Park in Urbana. Registration is 8 to 8:45, and there's a cute little line in here. We're having free coffee and donuts, so if you come at 8:45, you're out of luck.
Because
the lines will be incredibly long at 8:45. So, and I will be there.
This benefits the
Humane Society, Humane Society.
Okay, very good.
I hope to see a lot of people there tomorrow.
Okay, and we hope to see you in November.
I'll be here.
And another thing is my producer, Harriet Williamson, and I were working on a program where we want to talk about caring for mature animals.
I'd love to do that.
And and like, for instance, having Linda Case on
mm-hmm.
and talk about nutrition,
mm-hmm.
talk about pain,
mm-hmm.
talk about what can you expect?
Training.
We've all been there.
So
sounds
it's something
great.
To look forward to and to stay tuned, I guess. So that we'll let you know when that's going to come up.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll see you
Take
next
care.
Month. You too.
Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. From the board this afternoon, futures finished quietly today. The corn down about a penny, penny and three quarters. The soybeans were unchanged, up a half to down a quarter for the day. The August contract was for next year the big mover of the day. It did finish a nickel higher in that August contract for next year. We'll talk with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, during the closing market report. That starts at 6 after the hour, 2 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. By the way, tomorrow on Commodity Week, we're going to check in on the Iowa crop as thoroughly as we possibly can. Iowa State Ag Economist Bob Wisner will be along. Many of you are anxious about the impending crop report, which is due October the 12th. We'll take a look at complete production across the United States. As you know, the September and October reports last year where that big difference in the size of last year's crop showed up at 11 billion in September to 11.7 billion in October. And we're looking to see whether there'll be another October surprise this year. And many of the traders and analysts are thinking that may very well be the case, with a 10.6 crop growing not nearly 700 million, but maybe 400 million this time around, up to something in the neighborhood of 10.9 million. Our guess is that much of that will come out of the places that are very good or have been very good in the last several months. That would be Iowa, Minnesota, parts of Nebraska. Bob Wisner will help us divine whether that happens to be the case or not. That happens on Commodity Week tomorrow at 11:30. Now let's take a look at the numbers from Chicago Board of Trade. December wheat futures, 343, the high price today, the low at 336. The wheat futures settled lower across that pit at 7.25 down. It's 338 in the December contract. The March futures at 357 high, low at 350.5. Their settlement 352.5. They were down 6.75 in the May wheat. $3.63 the high, the low at 358. Settlement price there, $3.60, off 6.5 cents. July contract down 6.25. They had a high of 69.5, the low at 64 even. Settlement price at $3.65.25. July wheat once again down 6.25 for the harvest month in 2006. September futures were off 6 for the July or for the September wheat, 371.5. The settlement price there, the high at 75 and the low at 70 even. Now the corn pit, December futures 204.25, the high, the low at 202.25. Settlement price at $2.25 a bushel. They were down a penny and three quarters for the harvest month. December contract in the corn pit. The March futures, 217.25 the high, the low at 215.25. Settlement price at 215.5, and they were off 1.5. May contract, 224.75 the high, the low at 223.25. May futures settled 223.5 down a penny and a half. And July contract for the corn pit, 232.25 the high, the low at $2.30. Settlement price at 230.5, and they were down 0.25. September futures, 238.5 the high, the low at 237.25. Settlement price at 237.25 down a penny and a half. And new December for 2006, 248.25 the high, the low at 246.5. Settlement price there at 246.75. They were down 1.25. December oats now, 170.5 the high, the low at $1.67.25. Settlement price $1.68. They were off 0.75. The March futures down 0.5 cent. 174.5 the high, the low at $1.72. Settlement price at $1.72.5. Once again, 0.5 cent lower for the day. November bean futures, 569 the high, the low at 563. Settlement price at 564.25, unchanged. January futures, 580 the high, the low at 575. Settlement price at 576. They were down 0.5. And the March contract to 588 high, low at 583. Settlement price at 583.75, up 0.25. The May contract, 593.5 the high, the low at 588. Settlement price at 589.25. They were up 0.75. July futures in the bean pit, 598.5 the high, the low at 593. Settlement price at $5.94. They were up 0.75. In the August soybean futures, 5 cents higher, $5.96 the high, the low at $5.92. Settlement price there at $5.95 for the August next year. Up a nickel for the day. October bean meal, $165.50. The high, the low at $163.50. Settlement price at $165.30. They were up $160. And December bean meal, $169.30. The high, the low at $167.10. Settlement price at $168.60. They were up $130. And the October bean oil, $23.97. The high, the low at $23.45. Settlement price at $23.82. Off 35, and December futures were down 39 at 24.04. Just to clarify, that August contract indeed was up a nickel as far as the numbers are showing to us here at WILL AM 580. The rest of the pit mostly unchanged in the bean pit, in case you happen to hear that one late and thought, well, how did that happen? We'll try to devise that a little bit later when we talk to Mike Zuzulo. Now, here are the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange with Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, Todd. October feeder cattle, the high today, 118.40, the low 117.05, the settlement 118.32.5, that up 75. November 116.85, the high 115.65, the low 116.65, the settlement, that up 37.5. January feeder cattle, 113.95, the high 112.65, the low 113.82.5, the settlement, that up 50. October live cattle, 90.77.5, the high 89.25, the low 90.25, the settlement, that up 52.5. December, 91.70, the high, the low 90.27.5, finishing at 91.10, that up 32.5. October lean hog, 68.65, the high 67.85, the low 68.55, the settlement, that up 87.5. December lean hog, 65.62.5, the high 64.45, the low 65.02.5, the settlement, that up 65. February, 68.10, the high 67.10, the low 68 even, the settlement, that up 85. April lean hog, 67.20, the high 66.10, the low 67.05, the settlement, that was up 77.5. And February pork bellies, 98.40, the high 96.05, the low, the settlement 97.47.5, that up 107.5. Now let's take a look at what's happening on Wall Street. The Dow is up 7 points at 10,294, the NASDAQ up 6 at 2090, the S&P 500 up 4 at 1195.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois, on the AM dial at 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Henry Frain is our technical director today, the producer for the Afternoon Magazine, Harriet Williamson. Mike Sola's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon. In southeastern Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. In